Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, damn, Skippy, you starting now. Happy Tuesday to you. You are indeed in the loop. Shout out to Luke. Shout out to Seth. Shout out to all you fine folks listening. Let's get it started. And always get involved with the program. We need that. We want that. We desire that here. Do that by a few various mediums, or media, I guess is the way that you would do that, plural. 713-572-4610 is the number to text. That's always open for you. Also, appreciation to the Mokarem Injury Lawyers for the live streams. Both on the YouTube page, Sports Radio 610, and on the Twitch chat, 610 Houston. And yeah, man, there's a lot of different places where you can catch us outside. I mean, YouTube, Twitch, those are obviously there for you. Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, your smart speaker, just let them know.
Spotify, any of them.
Spotify's got us.
Yeah.
Really?
Spotify
is that just the podcast though?
It might be.
I was like, you can listen to us live.
Anywhere you can listen to it, you can listen to us.
And we appreciate you as you do that. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans later on in the program. I believe about 12:45 is the time that I will mark there. Let's have a little fun. We'll do a little college football on a Tuesday. We'll move that up in the show in order to accommodate D'Amico as well.
I'm sure he appreciates that.
I don't know that he cares, if we're going to be honest.
He knows our rundown.
I do wonder. I like the idea of D'Amico in his office. Like, hey, let's get through this. I need to go back and see.
Let me see what time Reggie and them on.
When's the question of the day?
Yeah, let me see what time Judge John Lopez come on. Is this a thing? Is a subsection of, like, is a type of segment that I would like to do here, if you don't mind, John Lopez, because we're coming out of the bye week. I think we're officially out of week six now, with Monday Night Football getting run yesterday, both games, which I'm very, very tired of. And of course we have next week as well.
Yeah,
but we're headed into week seven, but week six as a bye week for the Texans obviously gave us an opportunity to just kind of think about the league at large. And one of the things that I was thinking about, or that I was looking at, was a thing that was just kind of one of those novelties that you go, huh. Mm-hmm. And I think we all do this where we see something, we go, is this a thing? And it was inspired by your week seven opponent, the Seattle Seahawks, particularly a certain player that played for the Ohio State University, Jackson Smith and Jigba. You didn't have to do it. I was like, we're not doing the call and response.
I'm feeling generous. Okay, today.
One of the many receivers, you know, from the Ohio State University.
By the way, we're going to get into that even further, but like Jackson Smith and Jigba has been an absolute menace. Mm-hmm. And he's basically the focal point when it comes to that offense. And I don't know that anybody anticipated him being this to this degree, right? They traded away DK Metcalf, and you were like, it's Jackson Smith and Jigba and the Pips.
And honestly, I think even during the draft, I think people kept trying to put him as just only a slot receiver.
Right.
Every time you bring, oh, he's only a slot receiver.
Well,
I don't
hold
know if that
thought,
was not.
Figgy. Hold that thought. Go ahead.
Yeah, you've heard some of this when I was, because I asked you as well, like, is this a thing? So let's do a little bit of an experiment here to illustrate the thing that I'm trying to point to. Can you pull up the receiving leaders in the National Football
League? I'm looking at it right now.
All right. I would like you to do a segment that I like to call reading here, John Lopez.
Yes.
Who are the leaders? And when I, as John Lopez goes through this, dear listener, I want you to think about, who are the type of receivers that you're seeing at the top?
Body
of
type,
production,
type of role they've played traditionally, all of that.
Can I guess?
Yes.
The first thing I think about is like Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase.
Sure.
Just the big body receiver types. Mm-hmm.
And you would be incorrect. Well, kind of correct.
Yeah, I was like, we know that those dudes are tough.
Kind of correct. But the number one receiver in the NFL today as we sit here is Jackson Smith and Jigba.
I gave you that one. I told you up front that he has been
number
he's been
two.
Cooking.
Puka Nacua.
Yeah.
Which it should be no surprise, and it's actually kind of a surprise.
Was he kind of a slot guy? Did they look at him as a slot guy?
I think so.
Yeah, we were talking about it when Cooper Kupp was still there. Like, how do you get these guys both activated with both of them seemingly being most productive in that same space?
Yeah. Three George Pickens.
All right.
From the Cowboys. Big dude.
That's a big dude. That's an outside type of receiver.
Four, Emeka Egbuka. Hope he gets well soon.
There you go. There's your other Ohio State right here again.
Yeah. I guess I got to say IO. Five.
You don't have to. There's no obligation to that.
It just leaves you hanging. There's a grammatical term for that you have to finish. Like, you have to finish something if you know it. And yet, like, if I say liberty, liberty, liberty.
Liberty.
Of course. There's a grammatical term where people are just forced to finish, you know, that thing.
A lot of you.
I'll have to look it up and I'll let you guys know. Five. Jamar Chase is the fifth leading receiver. Then Amon-Ra St. Brown, six. Here goes your Justin Jefferson, seven. Drake London. I'm talking about receivers now.
Yeah.
Drake London, then Zay Flowers.
Yeah, and it was at Amon-Ra St. Brown where I was like, all right, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, because for me personally, and I think I've espoused this kind of thought process at some point during our time doing this show together, that I had kind of had a thought about Amon-Ra St. Brown that I was like, I'm not as high as everyone else is on him because I wonder if he is the type of receiver that forces defenses to adjust the way that they play.
Yeah.
And looking at this, I go, is this a thing? Because if you look at a half decade ago and maybe definitely a full decade ago, the receivers that you think of as the ones who terrify defenses and are the most productive are the Calvin Johnsons of the world, right? Guys that fit that type of mold.
Andre Johnson.
DeAndre
Hopkins.
We were just talking about Julio Jones, right? Yeah. Like, those were the ones that you thought of. When you look at a lot of those names, even some of the guys that were like, oh, kind of big body, they get their stuff all over the field. They get their stuff a lot of times in the middle field.
They get lined up in the slot.
Of course.
And we knew that, like, that lineup, but also just the type of guy. Like, those types of guys that you go, hey, man, this is just a slot guy. Also worth noting, not all those guys are the fastest guys in the world either, right? It's not just the pure physical, big body, fast dudes. Like, it is these technicians. It is these dudes that would previously have been looked at as a level of, I don't know, market inefficiency or what have you. Those are the guys that are at the top of production in this league. And so I go, is this a thing in the league? Not just, hey, this is a thing that's happening, but what does this say about the league? And how does this translate to the Houston Texans, who have a guy who maybe profiles more as a little bit of the old school style of guy, who, although we're seeing him get a little bit of movement to where he gets in the slot a bit. In fact, the touchdown that he scored a couple weeks ago over the middle of the field, he was the third option in. And he was in the middle, you know, a nice kind of inside route, in breaker, ball right perfectly on time, placed well at the goal line. But it's like guys are getting the ball in the middle of the field and from these slot positions. And it made me think immediately about Christian Kirk and Jalen Nolan.
Okay, so this made me think about defenses.
Okay,
interesting. Because I think what we're looking at here, and hear me out, as the people like to say, if you are a big-bodied, sort of not one-trick pony, because even players like Nico Collins can move around a little bit, but if you are by and large a big-bodied guy on the outside, defenses today can limit you. They can just flat-out limit you. But if you're not, if you can go inside, if you're good off of motion, if you can go outside, if you can you come out of the backfield, that's a lot more pressure on the defense to stop you. By the way, Nico Collins, 38th in receiving right now.
Sure. And
Well,
let me ask the question. Does that at all concern you or bother you? Do you make anything larger of that, or is that just
kind of a little bit? It has to, right? Because he was counted on so much. And in terms of, you know, being the guy, the one proven commodity on this team. But I think this is about defenses because, you know, these guys are all over the field putting pressure on defenses, defenses trying to adjust, and then you adjust to them and they're in motion. And as I just laid out there, they're kind of moving around all over the place, and you can't automatically say, oh, there's Nico, here's the cornerback, here's the safety. Boom. I think we can limit him. You're not going to limit him a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that with anything in sports, when you see something rise, it is a reaction to the other side of the football, and particularly in football, right? We talked about this at one point. The larger trend of maybe seeing more running of the football when you hit, you know, the Iron Dome over top. Shout out to Vic Fangio and all his proverbial sons in the league,
yeah,
of everybody putting these two high shells up. And now teams are like, hey, you're getting light. You're playing exclusively nickel. Your safeties are off the ball. We're going to run the ball and see if you have the ability to thump with us in that way. I think that you're also seeing some of that here as well, where you're right. Like, again, too high shell. We're limiting the ability of the fast, the super fast receiver on the outside going deep. We're limiting the opportunities when we have a safety and a cornerback looking at those big body wide receivers of you just kind of going up and bodying. And we're going to try and see, especially when you have linebacker, only a couple of linebackers who maybe aren't as great in coverage.
Right.
And then, you know, smaller guys in the middle of the field, we're going to try and take advantage of that, especially as the league is no longer thumping in a different way. You don't have Jason Sehorn out here hitting dudes like Michael Irvin had to deal with and things of those natures. So I think that you're right. There's a reaction there. But the idea that you have this here, this is clearly the place where teams are making their money.
Yeah.
Right? Teams are making their money passing the football, at least to the highest degree, with these types of players and activating them. And some of this is like you got to activate Nico Collins, which we've seen some of that to some degree. But it does make me go, we should be getting a decent amount of production out of your slot type guys.
And you're not.
Not yet.
You're not. So because even Nico Collins at 38, look at the guys ahead of him. 37, Ladd McConkey, another one of those guys.
My guy, Ladarius.
Yeah, one of those guys. That come. 36, Deebo Samuel. You know, guys that are versatile in how you can be implemented are the wave of the future. You can see it right here in the numbers. I love that you brought this up because I hadn't even thought of it. I just see the numbers and say, okay, well, that's a receiver that does this. But when you start looking at it closely, you realize what a coach would like to say. We got to figure out a way to get these guys the ball, these players the ball. Figuring out a way is a lot easier when players can go inside, outside, backfield, you know, motion, all that stuff. Whereas, and it's not necessarily a shot at Nick Caley's offense. It has been productive lately. But what I think it does illustrate, you're not getting what you need out of Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk was brought in for that.
Now,
and Jalen Nolb, obviously on a curve, you know, grading him.
Well, yeah, and there's some qualifiers that we need across all of this when we bring this back home to the Houston Texans. First and foremost, I want to go back to Nico Collins. I was not surprised to not see him be represented high because this offense just flat out was not fully functional in the first 2-3 weeks of the season. So I don't know how you expect the raw numbers of 5 or 6 weeks through the season to reflect his prowess with that. Similarly, Christian Kirk missed the first couple of weeks
of
the season as well. That's going to put you behind the eight ball. And then Jalen Noll just hasn't had much opportunity. But when we've seen him get into the game, Christian Kirk also has not been as much like now we have to go qualitative as opposed to like the numbers and the quantitative part of this. It has not looked as impactful at least as I have imagined and honestly as I'd seen with, to be fair, a higher quality of slot type receiver that we're seeing at the top of this. But I am interested to see how quickly he evolves in this and in the system and this comfort, especially coming off of a bye week where hopefully you find a little bit more of a jump than you would in any other week to week situation. Because also you're stifling a guy that seems to have some capability in Jalen Noll by not putting him on the field right.
This is correct. But Christian Kirk, 3 games, 10 catches, 16 targets, ranks 138th in the NFL in receiving. What that tells me.
That's total yards. Let me see if I can find one that's a little bit more kind of.
A little more friendly.
Yeah.
but I think, you know, if we're just trusting our eyes on this, have you seen Christian Kirk really fight for the ball in traffic? Really be able to and it sounds critical of him, but I think it's just his body type, the way that he's never really been a guy that can that can get open a number of different ways, even though they've used him inside and out, mostly inside. So maybe he just, it's just a matter of the game plan, the offense sort of adapting to him a little better.
And I was watching the QB school, JT O'Sullivan, as a quarterback, a former quarterback, and you know, he breaks down film. He actually did a pretty good breakdown of CJ Stroud versus the Ravens. And one of the things, there's like a play where it's very evident that Christian Kirk, it has like an option route and he decides to take it deep. And in that moment, what CJ Stroud probably needs is a dude who's just open to the flat.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm looking for. I don't think I need him to be the Zay Flowers and the Amon-Ra St. Brown and of course the Jaxon Smith-Njigba, even though that could be helpful clearly. If you get somebody who's going to put up those type of yards, yeah, give me that. I do, though, want to see him find his full home in this offense because clearly that slot is a very important portion of what's happening in this league. It's clearly a very important portion of what this offense looks like. And right now he's not at the full extent of that. Some of that is to be expected with, you know, the late coming on. Mm-hmm. But also, I think that that's clearly going to be important for C.J. Stroud, who's already doing – he's starting to maximize what he's capable of doing and what I think his portion of this. I think now you look at some of the pieces around him and say, what are you bringing to the table to help elevate this offense? Because it's super important with this stretch run that you're coming into.
And last thing on this with the receivers and how they're using them, we do have to go back to the style of offense that they run. You know, even though they put up, 44 against the Ravens, it's still an offense that is not going to be a lot more chunk plays, downfield throws. It's a pick your spots on the big throws type of offense. So it also ties in a little bit with Nick Caley and his approach, too.
Yeah, so this is going to be something, again, I was like, is this a thing?
Where, well, I think it is.
And I think it is as well, and I want to see how the Texans ultimately relate to it, whether it's getting Nico Collins kind of slot opportunities, which I know isn't necessarily the fullness of this, but that's clearly a portion of it. And we've seen the early developments on that, so I'm actually willing to give that a check. I think also seeing Christian Kirk develop as more of a threat there, and hopefully, I think the thing that we've all been clamoring for, seeing a little bit more of Jalen Knoll, getting some opportunities there, because this is clearly an effective portion of the NFL at this moment. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610, just getting going on a Tuesday. Coming up next tonight, you get the third preseason game in the Houston Rockets preseason schedule. We are a week out from the season opening. What do you need to see in these last two preseason games from the Rockets? And I think I need to walk back a comment I made last year about a particular Houston Rocket. We'll do all that next. Yeah, happy Tuesday to you. You are indeed in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Again, the number to text, 713-572-4610. Remember for the 832, and I did make mention of this, Christian Kirk has played in three games. Most of those wide receivers have played five or six.
Which it's early.
And that was the thing. And that's why I was like, look, I'm not going to hold
Figgy-isms.
It against him.
We got to make that a question of the day.
That is, yeah. What are your favorite in the loop-isms or 610-isms, right? That might be a fun
one that we
circle back around to at some point. But yeah, but that's what I was saying is like qualitatively, there is still some things for Christian Kirk to show. And I think there's still a level of figuring out what the system is. Cause I think for him also, don't forget, you go back to training camp where he was like, slot receiver, particularly in this offense, is one of, if not the most difficult positions on the field outside of quarterback.
Yeah.
And he's had to jump into that without these few weeks. And honestly, because he got injured a little bit late into training camp as well. Yeah. He missed a little bit of the finishing touches on that as well. And we've seen with our own eyes this offense grow over the first five weeks of the season. So there's still some picking up. But I think my point was not necessarily to come down on him, but to be like, hey, I'm watching that space, especially with that trend that seems like it's going on there in the NFL. A trend that is absolutely going on with your Houston Rockets is they're winning preseason games. What does that mean for you? I don't necessarily know. However, there's only two more of them before a week from today, they open up the NBA regular season against the reigning NBA champion Oklahoma City Thunder on their home floor at the Paycor Center there in Oklahoma City.
I forgot they won the championship.
Right?
I was just thinking like, who won? I don't know why I thought it was Boston or something.
Yeah. Because that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough.
I totally forgot about them.
Mm-hmm. I'm off. My memory, it can be incredibly terrible. In fact, I'm sure you guys have seen it a number of times. But the one thing that
I don't remember.
The one thing I can go back. I see what you're doing. The one thing I can go back really far on is NBA champions. I could take you all the way back to 89.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that. Actually, I could take you back to 87.
I was about to say, who was the last five?
The last five? Okay, we're actually going to do this. So you have Thunder 2025. Dude, you had Celtics 24.
Like I would lose a lot of money.
I would look like a freaking idiot.
Get these guys off the air.
You had Nuggets 23. You had Warriors 22. You had Bucks 21.
Sure.
So there you go.
I'll take your word for it.
I trust you on that one, man.
Your word for
it. Yeah, but none of them played on NBA on NBC. That's the opening tip-off. Again, next week, the 21st, we've got the... we've got what that's going to look like. It's going to be Mike Tirico on the play-by-play. Reggie Miller and Jamal Crawford are the analysts. Carmelo Anthony, former Houston Rocket.
Be there for the start of the studio.
That'll be really fun. But before we get there, there's two more preseason games that you got. You got the Pelicans tonight, in fact, in New Orleans. Actually, is that at home? What do you need to see from these Rockets still in these final two preseason games to make you fully confident going into that matchup to start the season versus the Thunder.
Well, as you know, I don't watch NBA preseason games. I keep up with the development.
Not even with Kevin Durant on the floor. Even with the story.
I checked in on Kevin Durant. You're right. Was it Friday?
Yeah, jerk.
Was it Friday? I checked in on that. I want to. You know, to me, it's about the regular season. But obviously, in this business, you got to keep up with everything and see.
Was it Wednesday?
Was it Wednesday?
Oh no, I'm talking about the first one.
Oh no, no,
no. The first one with Kevin Durant.
Yeah, that was the first one with Kevin Durant.
Yeah. But it is worth remembering also that shout out to Danielle Lerner, covers the Rockets for the Chronicle. They're taking these two games as dress rehearsals.
So that's important.
So this isn't just any other preseason game. It is worth noting.
So here's what I want to see, and this has really just been in the last, you know, 2-3 days where I almost feel like we're overthinking this whole point guard thing. I really am.
Okay.
Reed Sheppard is the number 3 pick, and it goes back to me, like, what do you do really well naturally? Like, what are you naturally gifted at?
Okay.
He's a naturally gifted shooter, a naturally gifted distributor. That's your point guard. You know, if his off-season work in the weight room and defense has improved at all, it's Reed Sheppard. And I want to see that. I want to see, you know, him on the, you know, the things that he might have improved on. Amen Thompson obviously can do some things. Obviously, you know, you can run through Kevin Durant. You can run through Şengün. But if you're talking about like a classic defensive-minded, run your half-court offense coach like, you know, Ime Udoka, then it's Reed Sheppard.
I actually disagree.
It's Reed Sheppard. Reed Sheppard's your point guard.
I think you came to the answer that it feels like the earlier preseason games are starting to give us. I need to see how this works in full dress rehearsal fashion with, you know, with Point Alperin. Mm-hmm. Like this is the sub tease that I gave, which I have to give an apology. Last season there was a point where I was like, hey, all this baby Jokic stuff. Mm-hmm. I think he might be more baby Sabonis, mm-hmm. like a DeMontis Sabonis. Yeah, I got to walk that one back. Like, the Eurobasket, the things that he was able to do there, the progression that he has had in his career, Alperen Şengün, over this summer, and the early things that we've seen from him as a passing hub and as an offensive hub, I think I need to see them lean fully into the idea, and it feels like they are to some degree, that Alperen Şengün is your hub, and you actually try and do this kind of like what the Nuggets have done.
I think they're going to do that some. I think they're going to run through Durant some. I think they're going to run Amen some. But your starting point guard is Reed Sheppard to me. I think it's just it's a common sense thing, unless he's just, and we'll find out soon enough, you know, first 15, 20 games, unless it's just an incredible liability, you know, on the defensive side or however, you know, however you want to relay it. But yeah, they're going to run through Şengün and he's going to be integral. He's going to be very key. But I think in terms of like, and they're going to run the big lineup too. I think they're going to do all those things. But, you know, day in, day out, walk them out there, get started with Reed Sheppard as your point guard.
I want to see it.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've definitely lost belief that that is what you should do for a large amount of minutes, which obviously I think is when you're talking about starters, you're not just talking about who's out there on the floor to start.
Biggest
you're talking
minutes.
About who has the lion's share of minutes at these positions. And I actually don't think that Reed Sheppard is that. I think that he probably profiles more as a seventh man right now than he does as a starting point guard, which is a little frustrating. But I think as an organization, and if you follow these Rockets, you should be a little bit okay with the idea that, hey, you have a number 3 overall pick that doesn't immediately become a, you know, a foundational piece in your starting lineup, because look at Jabari Smith Jr. Like, that is also one of the things I need to see, is just more Jabari Smith Jr. And also more in the right ways. I think that he is definitely finding, and a shout out to B. Scott, who made this point, I don't know if it's Thursday or Friday last week, that he is becoming a little bit more of a creator unto himself. Like, I saw him turn some corners that previous Jabari Smith Jr. I did not anticipate. He talked about, you know, increasing his handle and getting better at that. And I'm seeing evidence of it, because sometimes the talk of what did you work on in the offseason is just
it's
that.
It's just crap, yeah.
You're seeing the evidence of it. I want to see him be more of that. Now, there's some of these where he's taking, you know, 180 pull-up turnaround jumpers from the mid-range. And I'm like, hey, dog, you're not full Kevin Durant just yet. But I do want to see more Jabari playing with this level of confidence, because I think that that could be another huge point where you go, who are the bucket getters, especially if you don't have guys that are creating for you and setting the table for you. Having more guys that can get their own thing is going to be important. You clearly have Kevin Durant as that. Amend when he gets downhill can exist as some of that. Alperin clearly can do some of that. Adding, if you now add Jabari, who can get his own shot, this becomes a little bit more tenable, even if it's not as assist oriented.
But
as
where's
maybe
the pulse?
You want.
Where's the pulse of this offense? You know, you need a guy that ultimately will bring the ball up, distribute, be able to knock down the shot because they're gonna, you know, obviously they're gonna be worried about some other guys on the floor. Again, I'm not saying you're wrong that these are all going to be elements of this team for big chunks of just about every game. I just feel, you know, that this is your point guard. Let's see how it rolls, and then you can make a change. And a texter on the YouTube channel pointed out, you know, the starting point guard might not even be on this team. You know, so that's a possibility as well. And that's December 15th, so you'll have time to figure it out.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah. One thing that I wanted to get in here, and I kind of backloaded it because I'm a little bit of a coward. I want to see them tighten up on defense, right? This is going to be a team. They're not abandoning the identity that we are going to be heavily defensive. We're going to get these boards. And they've leaned even heavier into the double big lineups, acquiring Clint Capella, who's mm-hmm. obviously gotten his time. Steven Adams still going to get that time as well. Now, it was the first two preseason games. It was the Hawks and the Jazz, but it was also the Hawks and the Jazz.
Yeah.
And those teams scored 113 and 127 points, respectively. Now, you put up a whole bunch of points yourself, but there was times where you were running that zone with those double bigs where people were getting into the heart of it way too easily.
Yeah.
I want to see that tighten up because you need to be that strong defensive team if that identity works. And I think you clearly have the pieces for it. Don't get lax on the execution of it. That's mm-hmm. something that I would like to see in these two games. But it begins tonight, 7 p.m. versus the Pelicans. Obviously, that's going to be on Space City Home Network, as Rockets games often are. Excited to see that, especially because I'm going to be hosting a watch party for the season opener next Tuesday as well. So I'm excited to get some Rockets basketball going here in the city of Houston. All right, you're in the loop. Coming up next, let's get to our question of the day. And inspired by, funny enough, postseason baseball. 713-572-4610. What are some incredible moments that would have been legendary but are lost to the time because the team lost? 713-572-4610. We'll talk about it next. Yeah, question of the day, Tom, ladies and gentlemen. What are some incredible moments that would have been legendary but your team lost? 713-572-4610, the number to text. Appreciate you getting involved here. And this was inspired by a little bit of postseason baseball, NLCS happening, Yes, NLCS happening out there between the Dodgers and the Brewers. And early on in this game.
First inning?
Was this the first inning?
First inning, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember it was still 0-0 at this point. And, I mean.
First or second?
All right, now I'm just going to have to watch the video again and make sure. But
well,
yeah.
We have it.
Or third.
This is in the fourth.
This
is in the fourth, yeah. Right? So this is the fourth. Max Muncy's at the plate for the Dodgers. Still 0-0. And the bases are juiced. So the Dodgers threatening to break this one open to some degree. What has been a stalemate to this point in game one of the NLCS. And this is what it sounded like.
And Muncy skies one to center field. Hit well. This one's got a chance. Frelick going back to the wall. He leaps. It's in and out of his glove, but he caught it. And now chaos on the bases. Might have a play at the plate. The throw. Not in time. No, he's out. He's out. It's a forced play at the plate. And he is out.
That was incredible. And frankly, I don't know how the Brewers didn't win after that. You know, just suck all the life out of the Dodgers. For those who didn't see it, deep drive, going to the wall, hits his glove, bounces off the wall, and then he catches it. But it's not a catch because it hit the wall. So the wall, obviously part of the field.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, they thought they were tagging up. Then they start running to home plate, throw to the shortstop. Shortstop throws to the catcher. Boom, out at first on a force out.
Yes.
On a force out.
That's why the play, playback, was that Joe Davis
yeah.
on Fox who go, or no, that's not Fox because that's on Turner.
Yeah.
But it's like, yo, he's safe because he didn't tag him. Like, nope, it's a force.
It's a force.
It's a force play at home. And so you get out of an incredible jam and you keep this thing going.
How do you not win that game? You suck the life out of the Dodgers. You make this incredible play. You're at home. The crowd is juiced. You come to the plate and then you end up losing the game. So it's
that'd be a play he'd talk about on this podcast 40 years from now.
Yes, it will be. But what he'll be saying is
greatest play I ever made.
It's kind of a footnote. It really is kind of a footnote. And maybe that's what we're saying here on the question of the day. What are some incredible moments that would have been legendary, but your team lost? You know, it ended up being just a footnote. That's one. and it got me started. It started me thinking about other plays. Couple came to mind. I'm curious on yours. 713-572-4610. On a personal level, 2012, Johnny Manziel goes into Alabama, beats Alabama. 2013, Alabama comes to Kyle Field. Aggies are losing. On their own five-yard line, you remember the play?
Yes.
On their own five-yard line, Johnny Manziel runs around like the maniac that he is.
That's right.
From the end zone, throws the ball to Mike Evans, 95-yard touchdown. I don't know if that tied it or drew him close, but either way, that 95-yard touchdown, everybody's like, holy smokes, he's going to do it again. But they ended up losing that game.
Why are you surprised? That was the play. That was the Texas A&M play. Johnny Manziel got into the huddle, and he was like,
I'm going to run around,
throw it to Mike. All right, on one, break. Like that was the play. No, that was a incredible play. And I remember that because we had gotten to the point where we're like, oh, okay, so like this is Nick Saban's problem.
Yeah.
You get a mobile quarterback, and you will eat his lunch. Mm. And he was like, we are ending this now. We are stopping this.
But then it changed his demeanor.
100%.
About quarterbacks like that.
And again, I think it's one of those things that he absolutely loves is moments of coaching where he gets an opportunity. Oh, I get an opportunity to be mad and coach something. Let's do it. That's absolutely one. You know what's funny? The one for me, and there's a lot of them obviously in Houston sports history, but the one that comes to my mind immediately when you talk about this isn't even something that is particular to one of my sports fandoms or anything. It is just NBA basketball. It is Western Conference, I think, semis. I can't even remember what year it was. It might have been 2004, interestingly enough, as 2004 comes up a few times. It is Lakers. It is Spurs. You remember the significance of 0.4 seconds?
Oh, yeah, Fisher.
Yeah, Derek Fisher hits just an incredible turnaround mid-range jumper that goes nothing but net, and he didn't even look at the rim.
He just ran to the locker room.
Yeah, they end up winning by 1 point. You want to know why they were down by 1 point? Because on the other end, when the Spurs were down by 1 point, it is Tim Duncan guarded by Shaquille O'Neal with Karl Malone coming over to help and hitting a turnaround mid-range jumper that is just absolute cash.
Yeah.
Like, not only is this a difficult shot, you're being guarded by two of the greatest, one of them with the asterisk, players of all time in the NBA. And it's like, no, we're just going to put this up and make it because I am an incredible player. And Tim Duncan, one of the best to ever happen. And nobody thinks about that because Derek Fisher.
I totally forgot about that.
Chucked up some trash.
Yeah,
the one I think about was 2009. It was the Cavs versus the Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And LeBron hit that long game winner, that crazy game winner, which they were down by 24.
Yeah.
So the Magic blew a 24-point lead. That's kind of sound familiar.
Yeah.
But LeBron hit that game winner, like incredible shot, but they end up losing the series.
that's what we're talking about. Like, it's kind of a footnote now. People don't even talk
about
it.
That's more of a personal accolade.
And sometimes it's not just in the same game. It's just in a series like what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You've heard me talk about Mike Scott a million times.
Mm.
I mean, the most untouchable pitcher run of pitching I've ever seen in my life. They ended up losing that series in 86.
A great point that came in on the text line alluded to the 2004 NLCS Game 7, Astros Cards in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Leadoff batter is Craig Biggio, and he goes yard. Mm-hmm. Like, this should be all the energy in St. Louis, Game 7. And
your boy was there.
You were?
Yeah.
And so you remember this, that you got Roger on the mound and everything. So once you lead off homer, you got to be like, psh.
Clemens pitching.
All right. let's do this.
Yeah.
In fact, you go up 2-0 because you have a sack fly, I believe, in the third. And then you get all the way to the sixth. Roger Clemens doing his damn thing, not allowing no runs on the board. And then here comes an Albert Pujols double after. Actually, let me start in the bottom of the sixth. They go single, and then they go ground out. So it's two outs, man on third. Albert Pujols hits a double, so that scores a run. We're tied at it had been 2-1 before that point. So, at that point, it becomes 2-2. And then there is a home run that scores Pujols and Scott Rowland. And then it's like all of a sudden you go from we have a lead, 2-1. Roger Clemens is doing what he does. We're getting to the sixth. We're probably going to hand it to the bullpen relatively soon to – oh, we are down.
Yeah.
We are on the road. I imagine this. You probably could speak to this. How did the building feel at that moment?
Yeah, that's
rough. And it all started with Craig Biggio lead off home run to establish the way that this game should have gone.
And it's a footnote now. Both of those things. How did we miss? Texters haven't missed this because we've got a bunch of text on this. Block punt, 24-0. Boom, let's go.
Oh, yeah.
Block punt, let's go.
Yeah. I got another one. Actually, this was 2007. Remember a thing called the BCS National Championship?
Oh, yeah.
I used to love the BCS National
Championship.
You would.
Yeah, it was it was Ohio State versus Florida.
We had computers making decisions. It was a beautiful time.
Yeah, but it was Ohio State versus Florida. First kickoff of the game, Ted Ginn ran it back like 93 yards.
Because that was a play.
I was at work. I used to work at a group home. Mm-hmm. So we were all watching the game. Everybody in there standing up, jumping up and down, like, yeah, yeah. And then Ted Ginn is from, you know, he's from Cleveland. Yeah. He's one of us. So we like, yeah, there go Ted Ginn, yeah. Yep, they lost that game.
Yep, they lost that one. Another one I thought of.
Might have been the only touchdown in that game.
They got worked.
Think about it.
They got worked.
Yeah.
Last year, I mean,
when
UH beat Duke. Like, a game that Duke probably should have won, but UH's defense and their big plays down the stretch. And that's going to be a footnote because they ended up, the same thing happened to them against Florida.
Yeah, that's rough. Yeah. Some other ones that came in, somebody was talking about just generally the 16-0 Patriots. I feel like people think about that, though. Like, that one doesn't get lost.
Not like they would have.
No.
You wouldn't have been talking about the 72 Dolphins, who, by the way, they've already popped champagne.
That's true. I hadn't thought about
that. Yeah,
but even with that Patriots, that team was so dominant, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it was no way they were going to lose,
but
man.
But they did.
Yeah. But like, I've never seen a quarterback and receiver duo like that with Randy Moss.
That's what I'm saying. The only person for whom I might feel sorry is Randy Moss. All them other jokers.
That was legendary, man. And then everybody thought Randy Moss was washed, too, because he had went to
Or a
Oakland.
Problem or something. Yeah.
He went over there and was legendary.
Mm-hmm. God, Randy Moss. What an incredible, incredible player. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's go around the NFL with whatever the hell that was on Monday Night Football, derogatory and congratulatory. But then also, this Amy Adams Strunk thing. We got to talk through this because the Titans are in a bad way, but I think I want to juxtapose it with the Texans. We'll do that next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's go around the NFL here in loop. And yesterday we made mention of the breaking news of the day, really. It was the NFL news in that we have a first head coach fired in the National Football League, and it's in the AFC South. It was Brian Callahan, not Bill, although Bill did announce that.
Bill said, I'm out.
He's like,
I'm
out staying, too. Letting y'all know, I ain't
y'all
hanging around.
Y'all gonna fire my son? Y'all gotta fire me too.
And it was like, kick rocks, big
You know what? Yeah. I quit.
Yeah.
You can't fire me. I quit.
Oh, yeah, that's probably how it worked out.
You think they would have wanted to keep Bill? Because in theory, like, his bona fides are there, but the production wasn't there, weirdly enough.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Nah, you can't keep him, man.
Brian Callahan fired.
I'm sure he felt a type of way, too. Like, awkward, y'all awkward. Did my son dirty.
Yeah.
Right. But, hey. I don't know that they did him dirty.
Hey, it is what he getting paid.
They might have done him a favor, to be honest.
He looked very bad. I mean, Justin Simmons was out here criticizing his teammates for not showing effort. Mm-hmm. Like, it was very clear.
He said it was a bad week of practice.
Yep. Yes.
Like, damn. Yep.
It's very clear that they lost. He lost the locker room, which is harder to do in football than any other sport, I would posit, with the authoritarian nature of, like, the dynamics. And there's just so many more dudes.
Yeah.
But he lost the locker room. Clearly, the schematics were poor. There's a lot of reasons why you fire him, and those were clearly there. Now, why the owner would want to do that, we don't know, because Amy Adams Strunk, John Lopez's favorite woman in sports, she was not at the press conference yesterday to discuss the firing of the head coach. And people took took issue with this. There's been four firings in the last few years by the Titans. Two general managers, two head coaches. Funny enough, not at the same time.
She's going to be on her fifth head coach and fourth general manager in 11 years.
Is that a lot?
That is a lot.
Okay.
That is dysfunction.
And Paul Kaharsky, who covers that team there in Nashville, pointed to something very interesting when he said why Amy Adams Strunk should be at the press conference, something that I saw with my own eyes when I was up there in Nashville. They have city and state funding for the new stadium that they're building right next to Nissan Stadium right now, and it is very far along in the process. And she is continuing in Paul Kaharsky's words in parlance, to field horrific product and face no consequences.
Yeah.
Close quote.
Yeah. Look, Amy Adams Strunk. Well, let's hear the exchange that Kaharsky had, first of all, with the leadership out, minus Amy Adams Strunk.
Right now.
Where? What do you mean?
Where's Amy Adams Strunk right now?
Yeah, she's at her home.
Why isn't she here? Right now.
Where? What do you mean?
Where's Amy Adams Strunk right now?
Yeah, she's at her home.
Why isn't she here?
I'm here representing her.
Amy Adams Strunk is a weak, cowardly, inept, empty suit that, frankly, is probably the best thing that's ever happened to this division. But when you don't have... When you preach accountability, and you do that in football, you know, about as much as, if not more than in any other realm, and then you are completely unaccountable after, as I mentioned, you're working on your fifth head coach and fourth general manager in 11 years, you are dysfunction personified. You're weak. You're inept. You're cowardly. I hope she hears this, because there is no other way to put this. A shout out to Paul Kaharsky for making her accountable. And, oh, by the way, while you're at home gardening or whatever the hell it is you're doing.
Hi, gardening. Why is that the... How dare you? How dare you put water on that basil plant, you coward?
While you're at home doing that, on the one hand, on the other, you're asking the people that you are doing a disservice to give you money for a multi-billion dollar stadium and then putting that product on the field. And it just got me thinking, first of all, I'm actually, as much as I despise this woman and what her family has done to this city and how they've continued to steal from this city and are petty, and I could tell you stories that would curl your hair about some of the things I've heard going on behind the scenes in Nashville, not just this year, but over the years. She is an embarrassment to the NFL. Let's set that aside.
Oh, okay. All right.
To the NFL.
She's an embarrassment to Nashville, to the family name, which is saying something, you know, when you're an embarrassment to that family name, to everything that is right, that the NFL wants to see right. She's a coward. She's a coward. You have to be accountable. And the last thing she is accountable in this case. But let's set that aside.
Okay, sure.
Because I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, let me set that aside.
That's not even my point. I just wanted to be honest.
That said... It does make you think about what you have in ownership here and what you want in ownership. And it kind of got me thinking about, we're not too far removed from, I mean, they weren't inept, you know, and cowardly, but they did hide.
It was sometimes
they
where
did hide.
I think you was on this very radio show saying,
I was,
where is Cal?
And I'm not hiding from that. I did say, where is Cal?
And
you know,
you asked the question because you didn't see him at the point.
Yeah, exactly. But
they took accountability too, man.
Thank you.
Like these are billionaire owners, like all over. They could easily be like, well, I don't care what they think.
At some point,
I pop out when stuff is going good.
At some point, Cal and Hannah, or both of them, or whatever, said, and they whether they were talking to each other, talking to themselves, looking in the mirror, whatever, they said, this isn't right. This is not how we should be doing this. And they fixed the problem by getting rid of Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien. And you know, then they went not only, you know, into the public, they were proactive,
Even when the team was bad.
Yes, even when the team was bad.
The team was bad, and they were still out there, man, sweating their butts off at training camp, shaking hands, cooking burgers.
Yep, and the burgers is always talked about, but it's really a lot more than that. That's sort of like the face of how they have transformed themselves. But more than that, they realized we have to change. This is not right. And they made the changes behind the scenes. Well, it wasn't even behind the scenes. You know, it was on center stage. But they also, like, embraced and brought in people that they listened to in terms of the H-Town, you know, embracing H-Town and Houston and really being proactive in terms of getting out there in the community. They, you know, they did so much more publicly. They answered questions at events. They did all this stuff. It just got me thinking about, I don't think Amy Adams is ever gonna change, because have I mentioned that she's a coward and weak and just a bad person?
I'm pretty sure you have. earlier, you sounded a lot like, when you were talking about Callahana, it sounded like you was quoting Rocky, if I can change, and you can change, and everybody can change.
But I see the thing is, these are rich owners, man. They don't have to change for anything. Mm-hmm. So, honestly, it's kind of shocking that Callahana was willing to do all of this stuff that no other owner is going to do.
Yeah.
Like, you could go all 32 teams. Jimmy Haslam for the Browns ain't cooking no burgers for nobody, man. He ain't getting out there with no fans to try to, do a redemption type thing to kind of get people on his side.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think it brings a better appreciation for recognizing a huge flaw in your organization and something that is detrimental to you, and changing, and flat out changing. Now, it's a lot easier now that they started winning, but Figgy brought up the point. They weren't winning when they decided this ain't right. In fact, they were a laughingstock.
You had David Culley, and then eventually went to Lovie Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Those were not good years.
Sure, and I think ultimately the objective is the winning part, right? Like the fans enjoy the proximity with an owner that appears like they care, or at least shows that they care, what have you. But people are in it to see a winning football team, right? Like, I think we can be honest about that and not obscure that fact. The problem with Amy Adams Strunk is that she's doing neither.
Yeah.
Right? Like, pick a struggle is what people have gotten common to saying now. And so, like, right now the struggle is both having not just a bad but an inept football team, and then also not having any level of accountability and not looking or appearing like you care at all about the struggle that you are putting your fans through.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God that's not over here, right? Yeah. Like, thank God that is not where this Texans team exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And it does make you think also about, some of the things, almost like a referendum on some of the things that the Texans are doing here, as much as they've turned things completely around. Is there anything that you'd like to maybe put in the suggestion box?
For the Texans?
Because they listen. You know,
they do.
They listen a lot. They listen a lot to us. Trust me on that. like, anything you'd like, 713-572-4610.
I like this. Go ahead and hit the suggestion
box. Hit the suggestion box, and we can forward it.
I'll let you forward that. You put that one on your account.
Because I really... The thing I admire the most about the McNairs, and even when I was just torching them and they heard me torching them, I always said they're good people. They were just embarrassed. And I think they're really good people, and they do the right things. But, you know, I criticized them harshly. You did. Everybody did. Well, not you, Richie. You weren't here, but most people did. But I feel like they're an ownership group that listens, and that's kind of at the core of all this. Amy Adams Strunk doesn't give a damn what you think.
And that, I think that's a lot of owners too, man. Mm-hmm. Just in general, when stuff is going bad, like, they don't care what the fans think and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them just, hey, you know, this is a business. I'm rich. We'll try to get it. It's my way. It's a power thing.
Yeah.
But, I just really appreciate Callahana. Just, I know this is kind of a love fest at this point, but I appreciate them just getting out there and saying, hey, we want to win. Mm-hmm. I think with them just getting out there kind of showing a little bit of emotion, I guess, that they want to win, they really trying.
Yeah.
I think won a lot of people over, because that's when you stop seeing the sell a team, Cal, and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Where a lot of fans, even though it was a bad couple years, they were still on their side a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going around the NFL here. Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Just visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL and get started today. All right, we had some Monday Night Football yesterday, and two games happening somewhat concurrently, not what we'll get this upcoming Monday, unfortunately.
Why not?
Buddy, I'm going to complain about that all week, and then I will drop it after that, but
They start at 6-7, and we're going at 9?
Correct. And
what are they doing to us?
I will say, it did make it so I kind of, even though I had both of them on, I had to pay attention to one of them more than the other, and I'm sure a lot of people with one television chose one. Mm-hmm. I feel like the right answer was Atlanta-Buffalo, right? Like, we ultimately got a really, really interesting finish with Bears-Commanders there. By the way, the Bears have won consecutive games by a score of 25-24. I don't know what to make of that. I will just leave that right here.
That'll be a scoregami.
Is that a combo scoregami?
I don't think that that's how that works, gentlemen. But
teams in NFL history.
Show me another team that did that.
Yeah.
Just a oddity. It's the first time that a team has done that back to back, though, of like scoring the same score, at particularly 25-24 consecutive games. But no, it was definitely Atlanta Buffalo, a game in which you brought in a 4-1 team and a 2-2 team, and I imagine just by those scores, you'd have been like, all right, this should be easy work. And so seeing the Atlanta Falcons jump out early and ultimately win 24-14 was shocking. But then as it was happening, it was also not shocking at all for me.
Yeah.
Did you have that same experience?
Well, after I saw the progress of the game, yes. But the outcome was shocking. I expected the Bills to win. I also, and this is just on me, I didn't know that the Falcons were such a complete team. Number one in the NFL today in total defense.
Correct.
Number two in total offense.
That's right. And it's been that. Like,
did you know that?
No, I definitely. I mean, I know they got Bijan Robinson, but I definitely didn't know the offense was number two.
Are you kidding?
Right. And I legitimately, I went back and I looked, and some of this is like, also, they had a fantastic game here. Mm. I was looking at DVOA, one of my favorites. You know me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I had completely forgotten that the Atlanta Falcons have been number one in DVOA defensively. Like, they have been an elite defense. They got turnovers in this game, two interceptions of Josh Allen. And honestly, they just made Josh Allen look problematic. Like, they just kind of made it look tough. And I saw DJ Bieniemy make a point that I agree with, is that this style of defense
it gives
Josh Allen issues. And I think that gives me a little bit of comfort in the idea of when you see them at home again here in Houston later on in the season, you might be able to make him look foolish. I guess as much as you can look at a 180-yard, 2-touchdown, 2-interception game as looking foolish.
Yeah, and not only that, it did kind of have me thinking a little bit about the Seattle game upcoming, simply because the Falcons were coming off a bye week to face the Bills. And it got me thinking, all right, Texans are coming off a bye week. You have all that extra time to prepare for a quality opponent. You know, maybe it makes you just a little bit better. And to your point, you know, Raheem Morris's defense, is an awful lot like D'Amico's, in terms of how they play the game. So it kind of gives you some promise there. The bad, if you want to use the word bad, man, I started thinking about, boy, if the Texans only had a running back that could, like Bijan. And I know that's asking a lot.
Yeah, that's asking for a Lamborghini
but if
at
you
this
had like
point,
a,
man.
But if you had just like a stud young running back, you know?
Well, but
the thing is, everybody want a running back in the fourth and fifth round and all that stuff.
That's a mistake. It's a mistake.
Sometimes you got to jump out there, man. If it's somebody.
Well, hold on. We're jumping out of the team, Gym 14, that's 3-2 right now and still figuring
out. No, I'm talking about the running back.
Yeah, and
I'm talking about the running back.
I think there will be opportunity to add running back. Yeah. When of the last 2 years would you have liked to use premium draft capital?
No. What I'm saying is, if there is a running back that you identify, you know, that is head and shoulders above the rest, which happened with Bijan, get him.
Okay,
get him.
The question I have, if we're going to do this as an indictment of the Texans, when was the instance where you would have made that selection?
It's not an indictment. I said if the Texans had a running back like that, could have.
But see, the problem is whenever you bring it up, it's like, oh, you could get one in the fourth round,
right?
Sure. Now,
you can't even have the conversation of maybe getting somebody in the second round because they say, oh, you could get
or first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I ain't even saying what you're.
I mean, Ashton Gentry this past year.
Ashton Gentry, you were not going to get close to. But I understand. Like, I understand.
You're missing my point. Yeah, my point is, if you can do it, you know,
I would say the second round.
This is Trader Nick, too, by the way. Yeah. You know,
I mean, Trader Nick needed to get to a place where he needed an offensive lineman and obviously had a little bit of a tough time making that deal. I hear you in general. I think also that is one of those things that's easy to do in hindsight. Mm-hmm. But on the front end of this, we've seen teams go in for an incredible running back Now you have to be like Marshall Faulk type guy, which I do think Bijan Robinson clearly has a capability of. 170 yards on the ground, add another 68 in the air, including an 81-yard touchdown run, which was the longest rush that we've had all season long. Like that dude is absolutely a monster. We knew he was coming out of Texas, but we've also seen that that team has not necessarily been able to use that to their benefit and give them winning football. Like it all comes within a context. So I'm not disagreeing with you. I think that there's more context necessary there, but he absolutely stunned in this game. I do wonder though, how much of this is Bijan being incredible. Tyler Allgeier was solid up until for a decent amount. He had a nice big run as well. How much of that also do we look at the Buffalo Bills and go, oh, yeah, I forgot about that big flaw in the middle. Now, they were missing their starting defensive tackle, but they were already one of, if not the worst run defenses in the league to begin with, missing a defensive tackle. And you go, hey, there's a big hole there, and that's a game that's way more winnable than it looks like when we look at the remaining 12 games of this Texans schedule.
Yeah, no, look, it was just it was one of those that can kind of encourage you based on the bye week and the defense. And there's nothing wrong with having a little FOMO, you know, on some of these running backs like
hell,
that.
I was doing the same thing with like a Jahmyr Gibbs, man. Yeah. Like I don't think they needed a running back when they drafted them, and they did.
Yep.
Someone was asking. Oh well, Anthony Richardson goes on IR with that eye injury, so the Colts will be looking for other options. Brian Branch, Lions. Mm-hmm. We mentioned after that game with the Chiefs, he hits Juju Smith-Schuster in the helmet with an open hand slap. He will get suspended for a game. Now he is going to appeal that suspension, but I know there was people in the moment that were like, well, Aziz, you know what I mean? They'd be talking about him, repeat offender and all this. Brian Branch seemingly getting a similar kind of reaction from the National Football League. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get to college football on a Tuesday as we'll talk to D'Amico, or we'll hear rather from D'Amico in the 12 o'clock hour. Let's talk a little bit more about the weekend that was in college football, because there was a lot of ranked teams that lost. We'll talk about that more next. Yeah, programming note, again, D'Amico Rines will be talking to the Assemble Media. 12:45 about is what we're looking at. So you'll take that live. You'll hear that live here on Sports Radio 610. In order to accommodate that, let's do a little bit of college football on a Tuesday, a weekend that was kind of wild, and it was capped off with a couple of jobs coming open. One of them on a smaller scale. Happy trails, Trent Dilfer. Thanks for stopping by the college
also
football
Oregon State, right?
Coaching booth. Oregon State also.
Yeah.
They did. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But the big one was James Franklin. We talked about this yesterday. Vacating his post after a 3-3 start for Penn State. They lost.
Vacating his post.
That's right.
Good
right.
Lord.
They got him out of here.
That is soft pedaling.
They got him out of here.
Or some people I like to see say ired instead of fired.
Yeah.
I-R-E-D.
Yeah.
They got him out of there after losing to UCLA.
I like that term, actually.
And Northwestern in successive weeks.
Yeah.
Now, where do you want to start on this weekend? Because I think there's a lot of things. And interestingly enough, like, we have college football tonight.
Yeah, there's like three games.
We are in Tuesday, Wednesday college football territory just because of the landscape where with TV and stuff, with all the shifting landscape, we're getting
more football every day.
We're getting more of the Power Four conferences on Fridays and Thursdays, where previously that had been like the MAC and some of the smaller conferences space. So they're moving further, even more so. I think Sam Houston is playing tomorrow night.
Oh my gosh. Did you see how Sam Houston State lost this week?
No, but at least they're giving Sam Houston State fans new and inventive ways to lose.
My gosh, I don't want to get into it. We can talk about it with B. Scott.
Okay, fair enough.
On Friday. But New Mexico State, Liberty, Arkansas State, South Alabama, Florida International, and Western Kentucky. How about that? Three college football games today. But the big one was Penn State vacating James Franklin's job.
That's right. That's right.
Well, I'm going to start saying that. I wasn't fired. He wasn't fired. They vacated his job.
Yeah, they got him out of there.
Anyway, and I started to listen to all these lists, and I know you've looked at them too, Reggie. Like, who's it going to be? Who are the leading candidates?
Bill O'Brien.
What are the odds make? I actually did see him after the show. He was on one of the lists that was out there. But I started listening to some of these press conferences, like Matt Rhule was asked about it.
Yes.
Didn't say squat. I'm happy to be here. This is a, what did he say? I think he called this a mecca or something like that. I forget what he said, but never said yes, never said no.
He can say all the buzzwords he want to say.
And there was a lot of that going around as well from Fran Brown, Syracuse coach, something similar. You never, the old non-denial, denial or something along those lines. Someone is lying because someone really wants that job and in the you know, the back channels is angling to get that job. Who do you think's going to fit there? Who do you think's going to get it?
Matt Rhule seems like just an easy decision to make. Mm-hmm. However, there is actually an underlying issue with the Matt Rhule hire.
Mm-hmm.
James Franklin gets fired in this job. Why?
Well, the big games.
Right? He hasn't won the big games. Can I take you to Matt Rhule's record against ranked opponents?
Look at this.
Now, admittedly, this is in Baylor. Mm-hmm. This is at Temple. Now this is at Nebraska. These are not currently powerhouses necessarily, and definitely not in the times that he's taken them over. However, even with that context, Matt Rhule is 3-23.
Ouch.
In his career versus ranked teams. The total wins that he's gotten against ranked teams in the last 10 seasons, 2014, he got a win against number 21 Eastern Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
2016, he got a win against number 21 Memphis. 2015, he got a win against number 19 Navy.
East Carolina, Memphis, and Navy?
That's right. Combined 0-18 at Baylor and Nebraska going against ranked opponents, mind you. So those wins roll at Temple.
Mm-hmm. The right answer seems to be Kurt Cignetti. I mean, it just does.
Penn State a better job than Indiana right now?
Well, I don't think Penn State is a great job. We talked about that yesterday. But it's got to be better than Indiana. Yeah, I would think it's got to be better than Indiana.
By the way, this is a fun factoid when you talk about the Big Ten. Obviously, James Franklin gets fired. That points me over to Iowa, whose head coach, Kirk Ferentz, has outlasted the 56 Big Ten coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Just over there trucking along. No offense, beating the hell out of team. Actually, no offense usually, except when they play Wisconsin. Did you see this score between Iowa and Wisconsin?
What was it?
37-0.
That's what it was.
So, and this is very, very mean to say. Obviously, we love J.J. Watt around these parts. However, his alma mater, not a good place.
No.
They used to be, I mean, if you had to characterize Wisconsin, they were a good team, if even though they weren't always an interesting team. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah, that was a Big Ten type of school.
They were trouble. I would just describe it. They were trouble. They would every once in a while get to the Rose Bowl, win the Rose Bowl. I think J.J.'s year, I think they did, and they were just trouble. They're not trouble right now. And that's a big issue. They love their football in Wisconsin, man.
So not only are they not good, they're also not interesting right now. Mm-hmm. That is a great way to get Luke Fickell fired at that job.
Glad you said that to kind of put a bow on this whole Penn State opening. I think what they really need is someone interesting, someone who has won big games and maybe not with the same level of talent and pedigree as Penn State. And I think that points to three guys. One of them obviously is going to pain me very much. I think Kurt Cignetti is fits that. Lane Kiffin fits that. And Mike Elko.
Mike Elko's name's been thrown out there.
Yeah, he fits it.
He'll dip out?
I don't think so, but you could say that all you want.
But money.
Money's not the issue. You know, he's from the Northeast and all that. So I don't think so, but you got to be fair here. And I think he wins games, has been winning games that he's not supposed to against ranked teams. Obviously built the program. Has won everywhere he's been, Duke, all that stuff. And Cignetti is the same thing, maybe to a larger degree. And Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin is an interesting cat that just built an amazing program and has beaten a lot of ranked teams.
Yeah, and speaking of John Lopez, mm-hmm. I actually bring you a gift here.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I don't often give your Texas A&M Aggies enough love, so I will try and do a little bit of that here today, because the Aggies obviously get another victory. This team has just been very good. They beat Florida 34-17. In fact, there's reporting that Florida is thinking about they're closing in on the decision to fire Billy Napier. I think Newsweek had that this week. But when you talk about Texas A&M, they are great, not good at defense right now.
Their third downs, amazing.
That is the point that I was coming to. In SEC play, opponents are 2 of 32 on third down versus Texas A&M. They are 0-3 on fourth down.
Yeah.
They get you these late downs, you are not doing anything against this defense.
Cassius Howell has made so much money this year. I think he has 8 sacks already, the number 9 in your program. But he's not alone. They have another kid number 50, and his name is I'm drawing a blank. He's more of a third down specialist. When they put those two guys in on third and fourth down, It's a problem. It's a big problem.
Is there a team that you're concerned with the rest of the A&M schedule as I read it out? Now, they're going on the road for three games, but at Arkansas?
If they come up and bite you. My answer is no.
You can just say
my
no.
My answer is no.
We don't have to. We don't have to
come up and do that Arkansas Fayetteville War Memorial State. Well, that's in Little Rock, but either way, that craziness. No is just the short answer. At LSU is the one.
At LSU is the one I was going to bring up. But then when you consider the fact that this defense has been really good and you look at the way that LSU's offense has actually been a little bit dicey.
Yeah.
Nussmeier has not looked like the guy that we anticipated coming into the season.
And they've beaten. Mike Elko has a plan for Nussmeier that has been a big issue for him.
At Missouri?
That would be probably atmosphere LSU team Missouri.
And Missouri has been
good.
They're 5-1.
They're good.
They're good. Eli Drinkwitz, also a name that you might need to consider a little bit in that Penn State discussion. Can I give you a little bit of cold water for the Missouri side of this?
I would love some.
Do you know where Missouri has gotten all their wins this year?
Not off the top of my head.
At home. You want to know why I know that?
Mm-hmm.
They have not played a road game yet.
Really?
They played 6 games this year and all of them are at home.
That's incredible.
I mean,
I didn't know this was allowed.
It's the rest of the games on the road.
I know, but
that's going to be
7
tough.
7 in a row.
Yeah.
Well, somehow they convinced the SEC to let
the
them schedule 12
the Aggies
home
are going
games.
There.
Hey, week 7, they're going to be, all right, thank you for the season.
Senior night, week 7.
It's been great, guys.
No, in reality, these next 3 games are going to probably define, you know, just how much of a, God, this sounds so weird to say, national championship contender that the Aggies
Dude,
are.
Dude, they're number 5 right now. And
they look high, man.
Yeah, number 4. Apologies. Yeah. They are only behind.
Did I just say that?
Dude, they're, when we're looking at what teams are good, the 3 teams ahead of them all have number 1 votes in the AP Top 25. Number 1 is Ohio State, deservedly so. Mm-hmm. They're handling their business. Miami, also deservedly so. They beat Florida State, a team that I have a stat on that will make you laugh. And then Indiana, who are clearly like a real-life, big-time program right now, or at least a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
And then A&M, right? Like, those are, I think those are the teams I look at and I go, those are the good teams in the league. I don't know how you feel about Ole Miss. I'm still figuring out my feelings there.
Yeah.
But, like, I look at that and I go, those are the teams that are good in the in college football right now. And A&M is firmly in there. You've got to think that, obviously, playoff is very well in their sights, but going deep into the playoff and making a run, like, that feels like it's in the possibilities for them.
I'm just amazed at myself. It's been 12, 13 years since I said anything of the kind that I just said. Ole Miss is really, really good. I think they were sleepwalking through their last game. And I think Ole Miss is going to be in the mix for a title. Texas Tech is a team you do not want to play. You don't want to play Texas Tech.
They've been steamrolling people,
They
man.
Have just been crushing folks.
Someone has to show up and play them in the Big 12 championship game, and I feel sorry for whoever that is. Yeah. I don't think that there's anybody in their class in the Big 12 right now.
Yeah. Alabama is a team you don't want to play right now.
Yeah, my favorite moment of the week, I made this note and I almost didn't get to it. Did you see the Caden Proctor Wildcat?
Mm-hmm.
They took the screen pass to the offensive lineman and made it. Just snap it directly to him.
That guy is... He's touching the ball, man.
There's a lot of fun stuff.
I think Georgia Tech's team you don't want to play. I'm not saying they're a national championship contender, but they're really good.
I need you to put together your teams that you don't want to play, and we'll get to that on Friday when we get our college football preview going. But that's a little college football on a Tuesday here. I might throw you a few nuggets later on in the show, but we continue to roll here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's talk about what's popping, including the AP men's basketball top 25 came out, and Houston obviously is there, but postseason baseball continues to roll on. We'll talk about that and more. All right, let's get to what's popping here on this Tuesday in loop on Sports Radio 610. Again, the program and note that I want to make mention of again, D'Amico Ryans will be speaking to the assembled media at about 12:45. So we'll carry that for you live when we get ourselves to that point. Another note that I want to have is Rockets preseason game 3 of 4 is happening tonight. They're playing against the New Orleans Pelicans. I got to be honest. Obviously, there's a lot of Rockets things I'm interested in. We talked about that earlier. We could talk about it again. I'm really interested in seeing Skinny Zion. Like, I really want to see what that looks like in this game here. So I'm excited for this game that is obviously, again, at Toyota Center. But big thing, I want to see even more. I mentioned this. I want to see even more Alperen Şengün as this hub. I'm very intrigued, and I'm actually very excited about the early returns on putting the ball in his hand, because did you see the 1-2 play? Well, actually, you probably didn't nearly as much, but the 1-2 play that Alperin and Amen have in like the reverse, where you have this big little, this forward guard.
Outside in almost.
Yeah, but it's not even like, obviously the cutting of Amen Thompson with the passing awareness that has continued to grow of Alperin Sengun, it pairs together really well and it's creating really good looks for both of those. I want to see that grow and be fostered continually.
Well, and you mentioned it, they're sort of, at least early on, maybe a half or whatever it might be, kind of looking at this as a dress rehearsal. So even just early on to start the game, it'll be interesting to see how they play that.
Yeah, and this team is getting really big, right? They're playing really sizable basketball. So, I just want to see more of that, obviously more Kevin Durant. And they're treating this like a dress rehearsal is one of the reasons why this is really interesting. I think one of the things also, they're going to try and focus on getting corner threes as well. Like they're going to try some different lineup combinations. And they're going to try and get some more shooting from the corner. Durant obviously is going to do that. Dorian Finney-Smith, who is not really going to be available for you here in the preseason, it's going to be a little bit later into the season, maybe a few weeks in the season, if memory serves, where you get him back. But this team is going to attack those corner threes, the shortest three that you can get. And I think for a team like this Rockets team that had a deficiency shooting threes, let's say it like that, getting those easier threes will be good, and getting teams to force them to have to guard the corners will also create for your slashers and your drivers on this team.
Yeah, and just the amount of shooting that they're going to be getting from Durant, the amount of passing they're going to be getting from Sengun, assists, ball movement. It's just going to be fun to watch this team, you know, how they operate the half-court offense, you know, from the corner threes to running it through Sengun, through how much – you know, and you and I disagree on this, how much, of a rotational guy is Reed Shepard going to be? It's just going to be fun to watch.
True. Yeah. How much does Reed Shepard continue to put on tape, right? That's going to be a fun thing to see. So tonight versus the Pelicans, it'll be your Rockets preseason game 3 of 4. These last two tonight and on Thursday evening are going to be the dress rehearsals, getting them ready for the season opener. A week from today.
That's right.
A week from today versus the Thunder.
Dang.
Some other things that are popping. Shout out to Kelvin Sampson and the UH Cougars. They just continue to be the best program in all of Houston sports right now, right? Like they hold that mantle, do they not?
They absolutely do. Just a powerhouse. That's the thing that you have to kind of come to grips with, but just sort of appreciate. The Houston Cougars basketball is right up there with Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, UConn, you know, all the blue bloods. They are.
I'm not sure if I'm willing to go that far just
they
yet.
They are. Look at their last 5 years.
Yeah, but I don't think that you determine blue bloods off of a 5-year span.
Why not?
I think that the blue bloods is more of an indication of a longer span there, but they're absolutely
but
amongst
the
best. But they've
also had the 70s and the 80s. And, sure. You know, and they're
decades in between
and
there.
Decades and decades in between, but now it's back. I mean, that's what happens.
Right, and I think now we're being pedantic, and that's all my fault, so I apologize for that. But clearly they're very, very good, and they're right where they should be, I think. They're number two on the preseason AAP poll. Now, of course, preseason polls only do but so much. But it's an acknowledgement of what this team has done. But also, they continue to bring back incredible talent. Mm-hmm. Only second to a Purdue team up there. Florida's still rated highly. UConn still rated highly. So when you talk about being amongst those teams, they literally are. Salute to Kelvin Sampson. Continue to get that respect. And I have no doubt that they'll live up to that. When we talk about preseason polls, one of those things is you often see a team where you go, well, they were a preseason, and now look at where they are. I have no doubt that they'll be able to hold up that kind of play.
Are just there year in, year out, as long as Kelvin Sampson is there. One just real quick note on the basketball top 25, and this is going to change a million times. Of course, we all know that. But number 8, BYU, and number 10, Texas Tech, interesting to me. They also are – those are two programs that have capitalized on NIL to the extreme. Football and basketball, they are spending money and they're reaping the rewards.
Now, I do want to give Texas Tech their credit. And of course, this NIL world is not not brand new. I know that they have more investment, Texas Tech does, in the last couple of years. But they had been building a basketball program in, I guess, more of what we would consider rather a grassroots way. But, like, their basketball program, this ain't out of nowhere. Like, they've been building this up.
You add
money, and that's a superpower.
I was going to say, if you can't stay there these days unless you're adding that money.
100%. Hey, man, this Mariners thing We had both championship series going last night. It'll only be the NLCS today. But yesterday, the Mariners absolutely shellacked the Toronto Blue Jays. Like we saw in game one, obviously coming off of a 15-inning instant classic. We were like, oh, maybe the Mariners will, you know, will lose because of that. They ended up getting a win. I was like, all right, cool. They won, but still it was close. This one wasn't. 10 runs, 10 hits in this one, and it was not particularly close. This Mariners team hits the ball so incredibly well. Like, this feels like Team of Destiny type stuff from my perspective.
They have an Astros vibe working. And not only that, but they are a very good sleep-deprived team. They are just, the last three games have been in, what, a span of 74 hours or something like that. They're just three wins in a row and crushing the ball, getting the pitching they want, they need. Yeah, Mariners have that look, don't they?
That's the thing, is like they look decisive in every facet of the game against the Jays right now. And they still have a rotation where you go, yeah, you're scared about the next guy that comes out there too. The Pens come in and been good. Like, this is just, I am preparing myself for, oh, okay.
Yeah.
World Series, they're going to be in it. And then beyond that, I think that.
Oh, they're a young team with a great farm system.
Yeah.
They're going to be around. They're going to be around for a while.
All that, oh, here come the Mariners. Mm-hmm. They're here.
They might be here.
Not they might be. They are.
Yeah, they are
they
here.
They are here.
Yeah.
Want to leave you with this. The Kinder Texas Bowl announced their 2025 Gridiron Legends class yesterday. And I want to get your take on what you think of this class. In this class, Robert Griffin III, Steve McKinney, Broderick Thomas, Kevin Smith, Ralph Cooper, and longtime Houston high school coach Chris Massey.
Pretty dang strong class. Robert Griffin III, obviously, you know, especially at Baylor, good Lord. Steve McKinney, I think three-year starter, obviously Texans, pro bowler as well. And I saw this when I was looking at the release. I always knew he had a bunch of McDonald's. You know, after post-career, he invested in his McKinney group or whatever it's called and opened some McDonald's. That guy's got 26 of them.
Nice.
26 Good McDonald's. Steve McKinney owns. Broderick Thomas, another legend, well-deserved. Kevin Smith, Super Bowl Kevin Smith. And shout out to Ralph Cooper, man. One of the all-time radio legends in the greater Houston area. Well-deserved for Ralph. Good dude, good friend. And Chris Massey, if you don't know, I think three state championships at Katy as an assistant coach. And then where did he go from there? Was it one of the one of the Clear Lakes?
Ocho, text and let us know.
Yeah, Ocho will let us know. Yeah.
I love bowl game, like kind of Hall of Fames or legends, things like this. I know that it's not going to be something that everybody gets into per se, but like when they actually do the galas, and it's always a fun portion and part of
it's a reunion. The lead up.
Yeah, there's also that part.
Because a lot of their former teammates show up and old school previous winners, etc.
From the 8-3-2, the Astros have trained this division very well how to become winners. First the Rangers, now the Mariners.
Rangers, yes and no, but yeah, Mariners.
Rangers did a little bit
sure.
of the flute, but the Mariners absolutely built this thing up.
A strong division, huh?
Yeah, it is.
It is looking stronger and stronger by the minute. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's talk about C.J. Stroud. Let's do a little bit of tiers for you. What is C.J. Stroud's dog rating amongst current starting quarterbacks? Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. Those shenanigans next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.